This is WSQFLP, Key Biscayne. Portions of the following program were pre-recorded.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts and guests and do not represent the views and opinions of the station or of the Key Biscayne Independent.
And again,
this is Antisocial, where we take a look at some of the broken arguments that happen on social media and attempt to fix them. From the Key Biscayne Independent, I'm Tony Winton.
And from the M Network, I'm Tom Mosloom. Tony, rather than fixing those arguments, can we just stop arguing? Is that something possible?
Well, you know, social media, and for that matter, every piece of media these days, is consumed with continuing arguments, and we just have the latest iteration of that with a very sad thing that happened yesterday, the death of an Associate Justice of the United States Supreme Court, Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yes, proof that no tragedy can go out without being made into a knife fight.
Yeah. But before we, and we'll have a discussion about the implications of that later, but before we did that, I wanted to bring on the line a former colleague of mine who worked at the Associated Press. He was the correspondent who covered the U.S. Supreme Court for, I think, about 24 years, if I'm not mistaken, Dick Corelli, who worked covering the justices. And he posted on Facebook yesterday a personal interaction that he had with Justice Ginsburg. Sometimes, you know, we just hear about the tropes and the memes and this and that. This is a personal story. And joining us now live from Gaithersburg, Maryland, is my friend Dick Corelli, the former Supreme Court reporter for the Associated Press. Hi, Dick.
Welcome.
Hi, Tony.
Good to hear from you. And thanks for joining us on Antisocial. Could you tell us a little bit about that post that you shared with people who follow you on Facebook and that very human moment that you had with Justice Ginsburg?
Sure, I'd be glad to. I retired from my AP job in September 2000 and took a job with the federal court system, actually. About 2 or 3 weeks after that change, my mom passed away. Now, I had covered Justice Ginsburg since 1993 and had several dealings with her, but she was not one of the justices I considered I knew very well. But about a week after my mom's death, I received a note from the justice, a handwritten note, and in it she said this: "Dear Mr. Corelli, even when one is fully grown, the death of a parent is a loss like no other. But you have the fortitude to carry on thriving in your life and work. May you continue to seek the joys of being alive as your mother would have willed. With sympathy, RBG."
Wow. What a note. You must have been so surprised and heartened.
I was touched. My wife and I were very touched. It was a very humane and very decent thing for her to do.
While we have you on the phone, and I don't want to keep you very long, thank you for sharing that. Another thing that doesn't, I think, get reported enough is the friendship that Justice Ginsburg had with Antonin Scalia. Polar, complete opposites in their perspective on the law, their various positions, but yet they had this amazing personal friendship. Can maybe share an anecdote or how that looked to you as someone who was covering the court?
Well, sure. I think it was a mutual admiration thing between the two of them. Clearly, political opposites, and to a certain extent, personality opposites. Ginsburg was a rather introverted, shy person. Scalia, just the opposite, a very gregarious fellow, very comfortable in his own skin, much like Ginsburg's late husband, Marty. In fact, Scalia and Marty were also very good friends. And Ginsburg and Scalia became travel buddies. They were opera buddies. They both had a great love of opera. And, of course, they were intellectual equals. They were both brilliant. They were among the fastest on a very fast track at the Supreme Court. And so there was this gravitational pull, even though they disagreed on many issues. Scalia would tell people that among modern justices, only Ginsburg and Thurgood Marshall were giants in the legal profession before even getting to put on robes.
Wow, but that is a fascinating insight.
Cool.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that and in coming on the program and letting us know just a little bit about, you know, there's going to be a huge, and we'll get to this later in the program, the decision on how the vacancy is going to be filled, and that's a political process. But I wanted to take the beginning of the program to talk a little bit about who this person was and her relationships. And thank you very much, Dick, for sharing
thank
that.
Thank you, Dick. For
sure, Tony.
Taking the
All
time.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
You know, it reminds me, though, we should have done that segment last. Because, you know, this hasn't gone on more than, what, 15 hours? And we're already in a political knife fight. We're already screaming at each other. And just hearing Dick tell that story and talk about Scalia and Ginsburg's friendship reminds us that if that could happen at the very top of political power, it should be easy among neighbors. But it isn't. For reasons I don't know, we have devolved into this knife fight. And it seems to me like that clouds people's decision making.
Well, I'm you know, I take it beginning at the end. It's just on every. It's the current biggest news at the moment, and I just wanted to start the program in that tone.
No, thank you.
In that tone, because we're about to have our next guest on in a moment, and we'll get into what is a political question that has to be resolved first at the county level and then at the village level. And you know, at the end of the day, you know, there are people involved, right? Even the opponents, they're opponents in an election, but that's. Where it should stop, right? Their opponents intellectually on a court, there should be hopefully that kind of grace.
All right. So the rule going forward is understanding the humanity that is at the table in the conversation and extending the maximum amount of grace. I like this. So far, I like this. This is my favorite show, Tony.
I second that emotion. I second that emotion. So without any further ado, then, let us get to our...
Let's get back to our candidates.
Our guest, yes. And our first guest is a candidate for the Miami-Dade County Commission. There was a runoff election, a primary earlier in the summer, and that has winnowed the field to two candidates. We had the first candidate on a couple of weeks ago, Raquel Regalado, a former school board member, and now joining us live here in the socially distanced pool table that is the heart of the M Network.
Yes, that's correct.
The heart of the M Network is Cindy Lerner, former mayor of Pinecrest, and welcome and thank you for joining us on Antisocial.
Glad to be here.
Great.
So, Cindy, most people who run for office come to their senses at some point, but no, you just keep running. I'm teasing you. What would make you run for this seat after being mayor and after going through those those terms that you were, you know, you served well? Why now? Why here? And what does this commission need?
A couple of reasons. While I was serving as mayor of Pinecrest, I embraced a lot of the countywide initiatives that were critically important for all of us in local government to be implementing. Southeast Florida Regional Climate Compact and the plans were something that I felt very strongly an obligation to move my village forward and advance those initiatives and make the investments that needed to be made. It was a four-county compact, and when I saw how collaboratively Broward County was working with all of their municipalities, and then I would look back at Miami-Dade County and say, hey, what's up? There was no collaboration. There was very little leadership coming out of the county administration, and there were I'd say the majority of municipalities. My term was from 2008 to 16. So it was very early on in the engagement of the community that I realized this is a countywide initiative, is a countywide problem, and to expect each individual municipality to figure it out for themselves without collaborating with the county and looking holistically at what our vulnerabilities are, what our highest priorities must be, and how to do the best investments through collaboration. I decided during my term, my next step was going to be to run for the county.
Well, we have to get into it because we're asking every candidate this question. You just talked about the word investment, right? Because the whole South Florida is next to the ocean. And then part in Miami, we have Biscayne Bay as well. So it's not only just in our own county, but regionally as well in the entire state. In Key Biscayne, and that's the listeners to this program primarily, we're a barrier island. And on the ballot, along with you and your opponent, and including the president of the United States, there's also going to be a ballot question about up to $100 million resiliency bond. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. Having watched what happened in the city of Miami, they went forward a couple of years ago with, I believe it was a $400 million referendum that was going to include affordable housing and resiliency and a few other initiatives. And it was, it passed. It was surprising to me that it passed because it was not laid out in advance. Here's how much is going to go to each particular project. It was just a request that you allow us to invest where needed, and the people of the city of Miami agreed to do that. City of Miami has been moving forward and finally updated their stormwater master plan, and there's a lot of movement toward doing a lot that hadn't been done probably for the last decade. There was a lot of paralysis in the city of Miami, as there has been at the county level. For my own personal experience going forward with the bond, we had built a community center in Pinecrest, which opened up just before I was elected mayor. And shortly after I was elected, my then county commissioner was Carlos Jimenez. And
it's amazing how these names seem to keep coming back in circles.
Really,
you know,
they move around a bit.
It's like maybe we should have a pool table effect where the ball bounces back; it comes right back at you. It's never
Miami politician bingo.
Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
So he came to see the community center and said, "Wow, you should go see the Key Biscayne Community Center." And I took him up on it. I went over and I got a tour of the Key Biscayne Community Center. And I asked them to explain to me how they went about the process of building, planning for, and then building this very impressive facility that includes so many different parts to it that allow your community to not only meet and congregate and socialize and have physical fitness opportunities all together in one rather large facility, probably three times the size of the one in Pinecrest. So they explained how they had brought everybody together and came in the community and asked what would you like to see in your community center. They had to pare it down, evidently, from what the initial more grandiose plans were, but they did a really good job. I come back to Pinecrest and I asked the then village manager, how did we decide to build this small little community center that we built? And he said, well, the village council gave me X number of dollars and said, go build what you can with this allocation without going out to the community and asking what they needed. So we ended up having to go forward and get a bond referendum for $5 million to be able to expand our community center within 5 years of having it built, which was my only experience personally at the time with a bond initiative. But it's a matter of understanding that your municipality, your village, your community has some extreme, severe, critical needs that are going to have to be addressed, and having faith that with your input, your oversight as the voters, that they're going to direct the funds when they need to what can be
right. So if
allocated.
I can just zero in a little bit. If you were a voter in Key Biscayne, you'd be voting yes on yes. Okay.
Yes, I would.
Right. And you view it. I mean, your opponent has an opposite opinion, and we'll just remind our listeners that. But you view that as an ability for a council to listen to the constituency and figure out what is needed and what is then approved with a bond mechanism.
Right.
Okay.
So when you talk about sea level rise being a priority, what can the county be doing should you take office? What are you going to bring to the table?
List. I'll shorten it to cut to the chase.
We want to remind you. Tom has his big digital clock.
I don't generally show that to the guests, Tony.
Basically, the county has not yet conducted a countywide vulnerability assessment. That's the first step. Countywide, not just the infrastructure, the assets of government and buildings and homes, but the populations too, because we have some very vulnerable populations scattered throughout the county. We need to know where all those vulnerabilities are and then put together a plan where we can prioritize addressing the most critical issues first. There is not a county commission committee dealing with climate change and sea level rise. It was folded into another committee, which ignores and avoids dealing with the issue. So we need a committee specifically focused on what we need to do for moving the county forward and the investments that need to be made for that. And that will allow the commission to focus on it, just like the Biscayne Bay Task Force has recommended there be somebody in charge of the bay and cleaning.
And let's talk about that, because we have the resiliency sea level rise question, but there's also the pollution question, right? And I'm going to steal your thunder. Do you want to use the word?
No, go ahead, Tony.
Okay, all right. The poop on the water and poop on the beaches, which is of critical interest to everyone in the county. It is, after all, a county park. But, of course, in Key Biscayne, you have that and you have the state park at the tip of the island. So we have this. We have the sewage plant. I guess there's different potential sources of where that keeps coming up. And then we have the sargassum problem. And I can go on and on and on. Water quality in general. What is the county doing? What is it not doing? What needs to be done?
So the county has been a dismal failure in overseeing and assuring that the consent decree that they entered into in 2014 with the federal government to clean up the water sewer system and the infrastructure. They've been taking their sweet time, and in the meantime, pipes are bursting. Weekly, monthly, pipes are bursting throughout the system. That's got to be accelerated so that the repairs and upgrades have been done. Then we've got septic to sewer that has to be addressed. But until we have the capacity from the sewer system to accommodate the new septic tank conversions. So again, that's the first step, is doing the infrastructure upgrades and making sure that we do it as quickly as possible. I went to the county Commission budget meeting in 2019. And after listening to the Biscayne Bay Task Force meetings, which I attended monthly, I felt like I had to go with my hair on fire and urge the commission, this is a matter of public safety, public emergency, to fix the system, and they haven't.
Well, this is sort of par for the course for the brand and reputation of Miami-Dade politics, where you have a lot of egos that sit around, but not a lot gets done. There's a lot of words, and some of them are spoken at high decibels, but when it comes down to actually doing the right thing, we seem to have a logjam. What do you bring to the table to make that go away?
I am looking forward to the opportunity with a new mayor and hence a new administration and half of a new commission with new vision and energy and a let's get it done attitude, which I will hope that this new commission will have. So what do I bring to the table? 8 years of leadership at local government as a mayor and as president of the Miami-Dade League of Cities. So I have the perspective of countywide engagement and collaboration and my previous stint as a state representative in the legislature, which also provided me not only the relationships and the knowledge of how to work Tallahassee, but the ability to have that perspective as well. I see too many local officials that are very parochial, and they only worry about what's within the boundaries of who elected them. And we can't afford to operate that way.
Sure. There's this environment. You've got traffic, very similar kind of, intergovernmental, interrelationship problem. We only have a couple of minutes left, and I do want to just pivot just a bit, if I could, Tom, to another issue that's come up, not just here in Miami, but nationally. We're having a huge discussion about race in America and the problems that continue to persist decades after the Civil Rights Act of 1964, continued problems in policing, and there are consent decrees in South Florida as well. What is your position on having a civilian independent board that has subpoena power to bring in another layer of review to address some of the issues?
So I had attended many of the coalition meetings of the organizations that worked very hard the last couple of years to bring that initiative forward again to the county commission. I was very much in favor of the final product that was brought to the commission, voted on by the commission, and then vetoed by the mayor because of the subpoena. So being practical about getting something going to start the process again. I approve of the way the commission relented and moved it forward without the kind of subpoena powers I believe they need.
But it will come up again.
And it will come up again. And I do believe a new commission will be able to include further opportunities to address how much investigative authority they need and we'll be able to pass it.
All right. It's the closing argument. 90 seconds. Tell us why we should vote for you.
Already? Okay.
I know. That was a quick interview, wasn't it?
A quick interview.
It was. Okay. So I have the breadth of experience, the support of all of the current elected officials in District 7 at the state level. Our state senators, our state legislators have endorsed me. I've got 25 other local officials who stand behind me, with me, by my side, want to see me on the county commission. I've worked very hard for the past 18 months out in the community, spending time learning as much as I can about every aspect of the district and the needs and the issues that our prior commissioner, quite frankly, neglected for the past 8 years. And I've had to explain why, what a commissioner is supposed to do, because people haven't seen their commissioner for many years. I am boots on the ground. I was as a mayor. I will be as a commissioner. And I will not be bringing any other politics onto the commission board as my opponent would. Nobody wants City of Miami politics on the county commission.
All right.
I think you got it.
Yes, so that was, we got there without playing the limbo music. We do that. That was a kind of a dig at your opponent.
Wow. I don't disagree with you.
Yeah.
I heard a few
things. Yeah.
Oh, I heard quite a few things.
Right. Well,
oh man,
it was the end of your closing argument.
That
so
great.
That you'd be commended for waiting as long as you did, I suppose. Thank you, Cindy Lerner, for joining us on Antisocial.
We hope you'll come back.
We hope you'll come back. And to remind everyone, the election is right around the corner. The ballots, I think, overseas ballots have already gone out. Yeah,
yeah,
right. Yeah. So they'll be showing up in mailboxes. So please get informed. Vote. It's your right, and it's your town.
All right, we'll be back.
And we are back on WSQF-LP, Blink Radio, Key Biscayne, 94.5 on your FM dial. I am Tony Winton.
And I am Tom Mosloom after a barn burner of an interview with Cindy Lerner. We now have our next candidate in the hot seat.
And we're going from the county level down to
the village level.
Village level.
That's
right.
Correct. So... Reynaldo Figueredo,
yes.
Thank you for being here today. I don't know who you are.
So, yes, tell
so
us.
So you have to introduce yourself to
yes.
me.
And
who
just
are
an introduction.
You? Why are you here? And why are you running for village council?
So first, I'm grateful that you guys have me here. Give me this platform, this chance to speak up and talk about myself and my ideas and what I want to do for Key Biscayne. I was born in Venezuela, but I've lived in the U.S. for 27 years. Moved down to Florida in 2015 after 14 years in New York. I'm in finance, been in finance for the last 29 years. And basically, with my wife and son, my son was through the whole school process in the U.S. and New York, where you have to change high school from junior to high school. And I said, well, why go through all the trouble within New York when we can, if we're in the long run, we want to move, retire somewhere else. And it's probably looking more like it's going to be Florida. Let's move now.
So you retired without stopping working?
I'm not retiring. I'm just one that I think I'm young and my brain says I'm still young. So I'm trying to get the stretch, yeah, the last stretch of good life here instead of coming here with my broken back and my leg, my cane. I've been playing rugby all my life, so my body's going to start telling me that everything hurts. That's coming soon. So
I'm
just
starting
to
put some pieces together. First rugby and now politics. I'm
yes.
starting to put
you,
some...
You really like to be punished, apparently.
I see where
well,
this
I have
is
the
going.
Size.
So, Key Biscayne, we have 10 candidates running. You are... our seventh guest on the our sixth guest, right? No, we've had everybody except three. So yep, you're number seven.
Number seven.
I was right the first time. Seven. What do you make of the fact that so many people are running for three seats? What's going on?
I think there's mayhem. I think there's call it a political year or call it whatever you want, but I think the council, the confrontation that we live here today on the island at the council level and at also different groups on the island makes it such that there's a lot of people who are not happy. And when people aren't happy, their voices are heard. And the best way to get your voice heard is to raise your hand and say, maybe I can do something for this.
Is that you? Does that describe you?
That is exactly how I came here. I think I'm a COVID in a COVID moment in my room working on my computer and et cetera, and started to read all these online papers and having more time to listen to other stuff. Started hearing all these issues about the bonds, about the stormwaters, this, left, right, that, but which seems perfectly fine. Things have to be done. But then you get all this fighting within the council and no agreement. And I don't know if it's lack of leadership. I don't know if it's too divided or what it is. But if those guys can't get it together, we're going nowhere. So I'm...
So is it fair to say that you think your number one issue is we have to get whatever the decision is, we have to get going, is right? It's a pragmatic argument.
Completely.
Okay.
Completely. Things have to get done. I believe in execution and accountability. I believe in I believe everyone's good. I believe everyone's good and has a good thought. No one would go to seek a post in a council of a small village, as a village, as you said, as we get down to the village, wanting to do wrong. I think we all want to do right. The thing is getting all those rights in the same direction and working for a greater cause.
So that brings up the greater cause that Key Biscayne is facing right now. Probably the big dollar amount is on that resiliency bond, right?
Yes.
Where do you stand on that and why?
I'm against the bond today. And I'm against the bond on... I'd say fully because the way it was presented. I think there was very poor communication for everyone, and that has brought up a lot of issues on, oh, it's a blank check, oh, it's money that we can't borrow because we don't own. And I think everyone has an argument. I believe that we do have to invest in the island. Practically, in the way I've seen and what we've done in the past, I think it's a village, it's an island that we've seen the property's values go from 2 billion to 8.6 billion. Right now, we've had a couple of 3 years ago coming down, and I don't see that turning around anytime soon. But we have to keep that up so that it keeps on rising. And the more it raises, we can lower taxes. Because the thing is, if I'd love to lower taxes. That's what I want to do. I want everyone to pay less taxes. Now, I can't do that if I'm caught in a financial structure that is asking for more money and my property values are going down.
Right. But I want to clarify that the bond actually does not increase any debt, that it is a authorization. So that if you were elected...
That's what I said. It was poorly set up. So right. Unfortunately, now the theme is...
It's required of step by state law. So that's, I guess the question is, before you can even consider using a general obligation bond, mm-hmm. you have to ask the voters for permission
True.
Before you can even propose even dollar one of debt. So I guess the question is, why, if you've worked in the financial sectors, mm-hmm. you've just told us that, why is someone who works in the financial sector not want to get the absolute lowest cost instrument possible for whatever borrowing might be needed? Why would you put a financial tool away from your disposal? Maybe it's a general obligation bond. Maybe it's a revenue bond. Maybe it's some other kind of note. Whatever it is, you as a decision maker, if you're elected, why would you not want to have a full set of options? I guess I If I could ask you that question, I'd love to hear, because you are in the financial sector.
Yes, yes.
Why would you think that?
And if I had shovel-ready projects today that we could break ground and start working and looking at the finance, I think it's the perfect moment to vote yes for a general obligation bond. I don't see anything ready as of yet. We have huge programs that need to be done in the island. We have undergrounding. We have the water. We have the stormwater. We have the beach renourishment. There's a lot of projects, but there's not one single one that is already here. It is sign off. Let's start tomorrow.
So, but should you get there, wouldn't you want to have the financing already in place?
Sure, but we're probably going to get there in a couple of years, so or in a year. I don't see it coming in 6 months. And if you add on that we are, and here's the tough one, and this is definitely the one that pushed me to run for council. No one knows where the economy is going. No one knows where the economy is going. We don't know what the effect of COVID is, but I am more inclined to say that it's going to be bad than good. So we're going to have a couple of years. We're going to have to start paying. Yes, unemployment has come down. It'll probably go out, continue to get better. But there's going to be a moment where structurally we're going to have a
problem. I'm just going to remind you to talk into the microphone because you're leaning back a little bit. So make sure people can hear you. Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
So I think in that point, I don't know. In my house, when it rains, you stay under the roof. You know, you don't go out there and play with electricity. I think that we need to be very cautious today on what we invest, how we invest it, and what's coming next.
Does that spill over into the larger budgeting question? Right now, the budgets are being set up by the village. There's talk about staffing. There's talk about the police force. There's talk about critical services. Are you of the mind to reduce those budgets?
I'm of the mind of being very cautious on what we spend. And don't get me wrong, I think one of the best things we have on the island is our own police force and our own firemen. I think the response times, the cost of having them is much lower than, and cost and efficiency, it's much lower the way it's set up today than if we did other models of, as other counties do. Would I sit down with the police department and say, guys, well, maybe we need to concentrate a little bit more on certain areas where the public doesn't seem safe? Yes, that's, I think, where we have to go. Does that mean that we have to cut certain expenditures and raise others? I don't know. We have to look at that, and we have to come to an agreement.
Well, let me try and put it a little sharper in perspective. The village manager just issued this past week her revised budget that's going to be coming up for a vote in a few days. It'll be the final vote of the council. The budget, it calls for a 1% decrease in taxes. It does trim the burden, if you will, on people in the community. It does also calls for no staff reductions. There are some deferred projects, some kinds of things in terms of maintenance and other kinds of projects are being deferred. Do you support that budget? Or do you think when it comes up for council, they should try to sharpen it some more, look for some more savings? What do you think?
I think we have to let her work. We have to try to leave. she's a professional. She has to do her position, and we have to allow the manager to continue to do her work.
That brings up the point of civility on the board, where, you know, as a council, you guys tend to get into these heated arguments, and it's a sign of the political times.
Well, not him. He's not there yet.
Right.
We'd have to wait and call him back if he's successful.
That's correct. Right. But, you know, you brought it up at the very beginning of your of this interview. You sort of talked about people on the council, you know, going back and forth and not getting anything done. What do you bring to the table to allow people to do their jobs and hold them accountable for when they may not do their jobs so well?
Well, I mean, accountability is great when you have a salary, you know? So if you have a salary and you don't do your job, guess what? Next. So I mean, accountability for me there, it's plain and simple. You have a project, you have to do something. Now, I do have to be sure at a council level that I provide you with the tools so that you can perform. If I'm in the council where everyone is fighting against each other and discussing and having, just trying to go against what everyone says, no matter what, because the other one said it, that it brings up that position of the professional manager and having to be a political person also and spend her time, his or her time, doing work that she shouldn't be doing.
We had a candidate for council sit in that chair and tell us that that person wanted to look over all of the materials rather than just take what the experts or what the manager had to offer, that he needed to review it for himself and make decisions for himself. That sounds like the opposite of where you're coming
from.
It's
completely the opposite. It's micromanagement for me. I think that people work like that well. I don't work like that well. I like to place trust on people. People are in positions because they've earned that position. If I have a seat on the council, it's because people believe in me and I will do my most to help the people. Or not to disappoint the person who voted for me, but that's the idea. I think trust is and it's against. And I think you said it in one word. It's one of my points in the campaign is about education, better education. And if you break that up, one of the points is civility. I think we need civility. We need basic education. We need, the demographics have changed tremendously, and not only on where on geographical inclinations or wherever they come from, but also on people who used to it was a vacation island and now it's a residential island. Sure. So that changes the whole. It's a whole different ballgame. It pulls resources from everything else.
It certainly has. It was an island that had a large snowbird population, and all of those units are now filled with young families, and they're going to schools and everything else. We have just a little bit of time left, and another big decision that's currently pending along with the budget is the collective bargaining with the unions, police, fire, and general staff. We're asking all the candidates. The Village of Key Biscayne, currently its bargaining position is offering them a zero, just freeze, basically. They would still be step increases for people with time and service, but my understanding is in terms of the overall agreement, it just would just be a zero. What do you think about that and in general, the posture of the government and its relationship with its organized labor workforce?
I think it's key for us to maintain the labor or all those negotiations on the island on an island level. I think we have to keep it as a small village. What comes out in the opinions and right now on how what to do here or there, it's a little bit early for me to go out there. But I think we have to stay within our village to complete our own problems now. And to correct our own problems. What I do, and I want to throw this out here, I fear that our biggest threat is, I think the projects is resiliency and call it all this bike lanes, everything we do, we can resolve it ourselves. And we have the as residents of Key Biscayne, council, whatever foundation, we have the means to do it by ourselves. What we don't have the means is to face our neighbors if we go divided. So if we are a fractured island and we have to sit down on the table with Miami-Dade or City of Miami or the Florida State Park, and there's an issue pending Rickenbacker or Bear Cub Bridge or anything, Crandon Park, and we don't know what we want and we're fighting amongst ourselves, there's no power there.
I think Abraham Lincoln said something like that. The house divided.
House divided thing, right?
Right.
All right.
And I'd like to throw this out. We've done. Key Biscayne has done great things. I'm the vice president of something that came out of Key Biscayne since 2016, and we're actually helping the homeless here in right under your building. We've taken about 243 people out of the streets. We have 80. We have nine houses. We've gone on the 10th. We have 74 people living homeless that were 6 months ago.
Hermanos
de la Calle.
Yes,
we'll talk after the show. I represent the Homeless Trust.
Oh, there we go.
So there we go. We'll have a follow-up show.
But now...
Now it's time.
It's your closing argument. You have 90 seconds. Why should we vote for you?
I think I bring civility. I bring fresh blood. I will... It's in my character to make ends meet. I will be conservative. I will spend what I have, not what I don't have. That's in my personal life. So I will try to impact that on the people. But I think my biggest strength is that trying to get everything together, and only by working together we can make this island go forward and invest and lower taxes and have a better village.
Reynaldo Figueiredo, thank you for joining Antisocial
on the show.
Thank you, guys.
And we will be back in just a minute. Keep us game, island paradise. Keep us game, island paradise.
And we go down the trails to the north point of the bear cut. The sand flies itching your head as you return back home. And then the next day you say you wanna go for a ride. And when my baby.
And we are back on Antisocial. I'm Tony Winton.
And I'm Tom Mosloom.
And we're on WSQF FM 94.5 on your dial, Blink Radio, Key Biscayne.
Tony, that was a barn burner of a show. That went by pretty darn quickly.
It did go fast pretty quickly. We had a national story. We had a county story. And we had a local story here in Key Biscayne.
We should do that all the time.
Well, if we can make it work, I think that would be fantastic.
I will tell you, I thought Cindy Lerner was by far the most critical of how things are currently going of any of the candidates that we've talked to up until this point. She not only laid out where the problems were, but exactly in detail what she would do to fix them. Now, whether I agree with her or not is irrelevant, but she was certainly the person who sat at the table and said, these are the problems, and this is how I'm going to fix them.
Right. She matched a message with an agenda and a concrete set of steps.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's how candidates should run their campaigns. Again, politics aside, the structure was really impressive. And Reynaldo, listen, he came ready.
Well, I mean, to the extent that, you know, we're talking about a complex issue, I heard him say that, in effect, and I'm paraphrasing here generally, that the incivility, the gridlock, has actually hurt the council's ability to persuade and make the case for what he agrees are important projects.
That's correct.
He's willing to even do a general obligation bond, but not now, because that's his argument is, it's a trust argument. You guys need to go and let somebody else do it.
You've poisoned the well. I can't trust you with this. Which is an amazing argument coming from anybody running for any office anywhere. Is, I'm running because I don't trust you. That was the rationale.
Well, but it's the funny thing is that that's actually showing up in the existing council holders who are not up for election this year. Ignacio Segarola, sitting member of council, basically made that argument in the Islander, this news, writing essentially, don't trust us. Vote no on the bond because you can't trust us.
It's amazing. And this is a good time to remind ourselves, everybody, of our first guest. And the story of Justice Ginsburg and her kindness and her graciousness and her ability to be friends with her political opposite and still love
right.
And
let's
care for.
Let's go back now to that. Now, as we told our listeners, we go back to that national story. This is something that happened last night. on the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court building in Washington, D.C. People mourning Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the steps of the Supreme Court, laying, you've probably seen the photos, laying little votive candles, all kinds of cards, and people just gathering to remember her service on the court. And now we have the unfortunate prospect, I hate to say that, it is going to be an incredibly contentious additional dimension to the national political conversation, which is going to have a ripple effect all the way down. I'm convinced of it on county races, on local races, and everything else.
Of course.
Everything has changed in.
Well, it is the October surprise. This is the October surprise. It just happened in September. Because nothing that the campaigns were doing before matter anymore. This is now going to be a campaign about Supreme Court justice, and everybody is playing it wrong. Both sides are playing this exactly the opposite as they should. The Democrats should say, let's go. Let's get somebody confirmed as soon as possible. Take it off the ballot. Take the Supreme Court justice off the ballot. And when we win, we're going to expand to 11.
Or 15, I'm hearing
whatever,
some people
right?
say. Yep.
and we're gonna re-level the playing field. That's what the Democrats should be doing, but they're not. They're saying, no, delay. The Republicans are saying, let's go now. The Republicans should be saying, no, we're going to wait till after the election. And this should be one of Donald Trump's campaign mantras is, you're not voting for me.
Well, I mean, now we have what is appear going to be, though, the opposite.
Yeah.
As you just said, we're the president this morning.
We live in upside down land.
Yes, the president this morning saying that he is going to put forward a nominee and that it should be acted quickly. And, you know, that is, you know, again, brings up this continuing problem of, I guess the word is hypocrisy or consistency or whatever you want to use. Just as a matter of history, here's what the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, said 2 years ago when a decision was made not to vote on Merrick Garland, President Obama's nominee, which was made earlier in the year.
Well, the situation when we broke for the recess 2 weeks ago was that there were 52 Republican senators who didn't think we needed either hearings or a vote in committee. And today, 2 weeks later, we have 52 Republicans who think we don't need either a hearing or a vote in committee. I think it's safe to say there will not be hearings or votes. I think it is also safe to say the next president, whoever that may be, is going to be the person who chooses the next Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, well, it doesn't get clearer than that, does it?
No.
Except it's clear as mud, because all politics leads to mud. That's where we are.
I'm in favor of something until I'm against it.
Well, I mean, they're going to argue that the rule was very specific about when the president and the Senate are led by different parties. That's where that's going to break. And the rest of us are going to scratch our head and go, why does that rule even exist?
Right.
What are we doing here? I think the takeaway, though, is as the knife fight begins, just everybody remember you don't have to get involved in that, and you could be nice to each other, irrespective of politics, irrespective of what your ideals are and the person you're talking to. Just be nice.
And that is actually my wife's motto, be nice. And that's how I did that. And I should point out, we didn't even talk about the potential nominees. You know, we have one from South Florida, Barbara Lagoa.
Let's do that next show. Let's lead next show and let people weigh in here and let it unfold over the next week. And Tony and I will read your comments live on the air.
All right. Well, with that, we're going to wrap up today's episode of Antisocial. I'm Tony Winton.
I'm Tom Mosloom. And be safe, everybody.
And again and again, I think I'm a
justice.